Are you ready to dream on? Do you know how to fly high and soar among the clouds? Get ready to live adventurously, because the Laura Meeks Show starts now. Listen as Laura lifts you off the ground while teaching you how to fly high. Forget ground-level drama and be prepared to confront your dreams head-on as she encourages you to navigate towards your North Star and into what just might be the best life you've imagined. Dream on. Live adventurously on The Laura Meeks Show.
You're alive. Can you see me in here? This is live from the COVID virus environment. This is us flying high. I'm in my home studio, and Zach and everybody else, we are all kind of hunkered down in this brand new environment. And a couple things I want to start out with today. First of all, this is Laura Meeks, Fly High Living. I am a transformation person. I have transformed myself in an incredible way, and I teach you how that you can transform you, your company, your employees, whatever it is that you need to transform. I am an expert at transformation. Obviously, in this new environment, one of the things that is going to come up a lot is not only how do you stay sane, and I just did another radio broadcast here locally in Palm Springs. And their question to me was, as a life coach, what would you say to people who are stuck inside and going crazy? Some people do well when they're like home with their spouse or their kids, and others don't do as well. But my big advice is this, is that if everything that we know about human life is that what you're thinking is creating and manifesting this world that we are in. And so given that idea and the law of attraction, limit yourself. If you're holding the, I should have had my little remote thing, but if you're holding the TV remote, back away from the TV. Because right now, if you really, really want to make yourself go crazy quickly, watch 16 hours of COVID virus on CNN or MSNBC or Fox News, and you're going to drive yourself bonkers. So my first piece of advice was make sure that you limit yourself. You can watch 30 minutes in the morning, 30 minutes at night, or pick one show. Like I like Rachel Maddow, so I might just watch Rachel's show. Or you may have a favorite as well. So first of all, limit the negative coming in, because that's a huge part of how to keep yourself sane. So in the end, we want to create an environment in our mind first. Now, the other thing I will tell you is, as a pilot, and I was commenting on Brian's, Brian looks more like a pilot to me than today, and I'll introduce Brian here in a second. But as a pilot, one of the things that's important when the oxygen, they tell you about the oxygen mask coming down and the fact that you put it on you first. And the reason is you can't help anybody else if you pass out and die. So it's important to put it on you first and to integrate that into your new COVID environment. You stay safe first. So you wash your hands, you keep yourself out of trouble so that you can help other people. And then once you're healthy, then you can help other people. And one of the things they're pointing out in the news today was the fact that a lot of people are actually experiencing the virus and moving through it. Some people not even knowing that they have the virus. But once you get to the other side, your body has built the antibodies, and then you can go actually become a big help to other people because you're less susceptible to it. So all of that just being said, keep yourself safe first. And then, and the best way to do that is to sit here and listen to us while you're sipping some tea. Today I have the pleasure of having Brian Rowling with me. Brian is a friend and a fellow Toastmaster. But as we've gotten to know each other, it's one of the things that I love about human life is that you just never. It's hard to put yourself in other person's shoes. And so the more you engage with other people and hear some of their stories, then you realize, oh my God, there is some interesting stuff. So Brian's a Toastmaster. He's an emerging speaker and a blogger. He is very much a techie. So we can delve into the mind of a techie and hear what's going on there. But he also is a fan of Emerson and some of the other people that I love to read. So Brian, say hi and correct whatever I said about you. You can rephrase that in your own words.
Okay. Well, you are correct. I am a fellow Toastmaster. I was just sending you the last two lines of this blog post that I was reflecting on today, but you can, I'll send you the blog post as well. Anyway, I am a tech geek, as you said. I prefer genius, but I'll take
tech. A genius? I consider it genius. That's okay.
I used to have a different answer when people would say I was a genius. I would play it off like, no, I just have a lot of experience or whatever. Now I just say, yep, I am.
Yep, I am. I am a genius.
You're right. And I like that a whole lot better for my own spirit, I guess. The other part is, what did you say, an emerging speaker?
Is it not true that you're part of your future vision is to be a public speaker?
That is true. Because I just think that once you get to a point where you kind of know for sure what the meaning is behind what you're saying, then you can share it with a wider audience. And obviously.
And first of all, this is a great place to start, right? Because we have a very wide audience here on Transformation Talk Radio. And we're broadcast not only in this network, but our show, this show that we're doing right now, will then be captured and replayed on other networks. So that is good. But tell me why it is important. A lot of people know a lot of things. So what drives you to share your thoughts with other people?
Oh, what drives me? I'm thinking that I have to go back quite a ways to get to the answer to this. And actually it comes from grade school. When I was in grade school, I was pretty sure that I was going to grow up to be a preacher.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I met a lot. That's funny because every once in a while I meet people who are not typically in a field that would lend itself to that. And they say, yeah, my first, I met somebody the other day who went to Catholic school and was going to be a priest. It's like,
sorry. Apologies to all Catholics if I just said yikes, but.
Yikes. Yeah. I was a Catholic for a long time. So
when I was in junior high, and some of the kids were going to Catholic school and part-time in the public school system, some of the stories they would tell me about things that went on in Catholic school made me very happy to be a Protestant.
Well, I have to tell you, my experience in the Catholic Church, it was interesting. I grew up basically without any religion. My mother was Unitarian, but we rarely, if ever, went. And I kind of became... I think in the boomer generation, it was very common that we kind of poo-pooed the religion side after, you know, the 60s and 70s, and we kind of went into this science is our religion, that everything can be explained in science. And so I kind of went that way. But then when I married Annie...
Momentarily, you're not moving and I don't hear you. Oh, there you are.
You know, when I married Annie, one of the things I thought was interesting is we spent the first 2 years apart. She was on Okinawa and I was on Guam, but she finally comes to Guam. And on Sunday, she gets dressed. It's like, so where are you going? It's like, well, I'm going to church. It's like, you're going to church? Where are you going to church? She says, I'm a Catholic. I go to the Catholic church. So interesting. Say, Brian, did we lose your video?
Oh, I'm still here. I'm still here. I cut off. I was just chatting just to tell you. I cut it off. My internet connection is saying it's unstable, so... I've found that cutting off video tends to smooth things.
Yeah. Okay. Well, good. If that needs be, that's.
I have a face for radio anyway.
Well, and so you know, I found that interesting that, you know, all of a sudden she's Catholic. Well, I eventually converted to Catholicism, and we were very, very active in the Catholic Church. But you're absolutely right. Her experience in Catholic school with the nuns and the rulers and all the other stuff, that I never endured any of that. My tour in the Catholic Church was much more spiritual. But let's go back to where you were gonna, you wanted to be in the ministry.
Oh, I just, when I was young, I read all these Bible stories and I understood them, and I kind of liked having some understanding of that. And I also started to enjoy this, the idea that there was always somebody watching over me, kind of looking out for me, making sure I was going to be okay. And that became more evident as I walked alone more often, if that makes sense. I'd be walking home. I would often walk a mile or more to get places in my little neighborhood. And sometimes it'd be through empty fields and stuff. And I could actually feel like the presence of someone or something that kind of had its arms around me and was making sure that everything's going to be, I could have full blown conversations with this force or power or whatever that was. I just start talking and I'd get interesting answers. And I thought it's kind of cool to have somebody to talk to when you're walking alone. And that turned into that little voice that I have reported on now.
Now, what state were you in?
Oh, I was in Illinois, a little town called Crystal Lake, Illinois, 50 miles northwest of Chicago.
Yeah, no, it's interesting because very similar to experiences that I had as a kid, because we, and again, maybe it was just the boomers, but we basically lived in the country. Where we were when I was growing up was kind of past the suburbs. But like you, my parents worked. And so I either rode my bike or walked everywhere I went. So I too had a lot of, now I never did connect like you did. So I find that interesting that you were, how old do you think you were when this happened?
I would guess that when I was in grade school, let's see, I would have been 10, 11, 12.
Yeah, that's an interesting time to have a spiritual event. Now, could you tie it to religion, or what was for you it more of a voice? I heard a voice.
No, that's the kind of thing that was interesting, is I don't remember telling anyone about it in my family. I just thought they would think I was goofy or whatever. And I just knew what I knew, which is the difference. See, in my writing too, I say it's great to have faith, but once you know something, faith is unnecessary. It's because it's not what you believe, it's what you actually know to be true. So because I knew this, I felt like I could manage it. I could be connected to it without having to be ridiculed for having voices in my head or whatever people would think about it. So I really didn't check with anyone until I got old enough to understand that it had always been there. And it comes from, I think it started as a mechanism created by early childhood experiences, where certain things happened that made me want to guard myself or wish that I had someone looking out for me or protecting me. And I think that's where it came from. It started off as the need for protection, then it became something I knew was there offering that protection. And it was kind of cool to get to that point.
Well, and I know you have spoken a number of times of some of the challenges that you had as a young child, where you may have felt like you needed protection. I thankfully didn't have that sort of stress that you might have had. Let's go down that road for a little bit. You're 12, 13 years old. You're walking through a field. You hear a voice. It's a calming. I mean, do you feel, I mean, you, as you mentioned, you know, part of the reason that I love this topic, because the whole topic today is that voice in your head, that little voice that you hear. And this obviously started early for you. A number of my favorite books talk about connecting to something outside yourself. And for some, that's like a shocking, oh my God, you know, what is this? Neil Donald Walsh very famously wrote a number of books about his conversation with God, hence the title, Conversations with God. Do you associate this voice with God as from your religion, or do you associate it as a spiritual person? I always ponder it more as a source of energy, source of vibration, but understanding my Catholic background, that would have been labeled God. But how would you label it?
Yeah, that is something I've also written from time to time. I say you can call this, you can call this voice anything you want. You can call it your spirit guide. You can call it, I don't care what name you give it. I often say you can call it George for all I care. Just give it a name if you need one. But the interesting part for me is that having understood that, and then having read the Conversations with God, the books you mentioned, they're three volumes, that I thought, oh, that's really a cool idea because I like writing. And I, at some point, got to the place where I said, you know, I really ought to try that. And it turns out I was in the depths of despair at that moment. I just thought, you know, this would be a good time for me to just test this thing. And I sat down with a computer screen and my blank page in front of me. And I just basically said, hey, are you there? And that little voice was just like, you know, I'm always here. What's your problem?
You know? It's like, where are you waiting for?
Yeah. That little voice has a kind of a sarcastic biting wit. And it's always like, you know, I'm here. So what, you know, what do you want? And then I can ask and have that conversation. And I did, and I wrote it all down. And when I read that particular writing, it really does sound like, to me, like the better part of me was saying, this is like your adult or your parent voice that tells you what you already know to be true and what's right. But sometimes you get desperate, let's say, and you get to a point where it's like you're so afraid and lonely and separated from others that you just feel like you're disappearing. And that little voice is like, man, come on, you know, slaps you around a little bit, wake you up and say, get your head back in the game because we're good. You and I we've always been good. And it's always we. A little voice actually came out in conversation at some point. I was like, so I've been thinking of you as a singular thing. And that little voice was like, well, what the hell do you think heavenly host means? And I was like, oh, that's biblical stuff. I was like, I forgot about that.
Okay.
All right.
Well, I find that I just love this whole idea and this whole topic in that it's interesting. First of all, labels. I spent a long time in the Catholic Church. Well, a long time, probably not as long as most, 10 or 15 years. Famously, they did not agree with my gender transition. And it's not that, it's funny because one of the things I found about religion in particular is that I've talked to a number of priests and they get it and they understand it. I've talked to a number of people in the Catholic Church, they get it and they understand it. The problem is that we craft up these bureaucratic, earthly, man-made systems, and it's the system that doesn't handle it. They weren't sure exactly what the rule was. There's nothing in the Bible that says anything about transgender, but they're sure that there's something wrong with it, so we're going to be hesitant. But individually, human individuals were very understanding. But I get that. I kind of digress there. But part of the reason I brought that up was that so I didn't really have a picture of God. I think as a kid, I would have thought God was the guy with the old guy with the clipboard. In the Catholic Church, it was a much more spiritual thing, but it was still kind of a male figure in my mind. And then when I went into the spiritual center, very often they say, you know, whatever the label is. And so I refer to that source energy as the joyful one. That was my inspiration that came out of that was, well, okay, I'm going to label that joyful one, only because labels, for me, sometimes hearing the word God just kind of has the ability to take my mind back to the guy with the clipboard, and I don't want to influence that. But another thing that you said that I find is interesting is what that is, what that voice is. For instance, I often, I just got done teaching a class on the six mental faculties. One of those is inspiration. And in so many ways, I think a lot of my ideas are me connecting to the joyful one and sharing information, which to me would come through as an inspiration. That would be my little label to put on that. It's not as clear, I think, as your conversation or Neil's conversation. But the other thing that I'll reflect on is that I think your conversational counterpart is also very, the way you describe it to me would reflect some of your personality as well. And when I read Neil, and I've met Neil, I've been in seminar with Neil, to hear Neil talk and then read his book is kind of like, yeah, the God that's answering him sounds like the God Neil needs to have answer him. Reflect on that.
Yeah. It's an interesting idea that, and you're right, because that's kind of what I was saying about it's the better side of you that knows better. But there are times when, I mean, there are clear-cut examples of times where that little voice, if I can tell this story, I don't know if I'm even answering your question, but while you were talking and you said the joyful one, that matches a lot of what I would say is a really good understanding of what it is. It's something bigger, better, happier maybe than you. I was just looking at Mr. Blue Sky by Electric Light Orchestra.
Yeah, I saw
because,
that.
Mr. Blue Sky could, if you listen to the lyrics, he could be talking about the same thing we're talking about. He's like, where were you? Well, I've been here all along. I'm just above the clouds. You just got to get past the clouds, right? Anyway, yeah. And you know that one. You know that one because of your potted experience. In any case, the story I was going to tell you is what prompted me to talk about this at Toastmasters was two things that happened. One happened in my office, and the other one happened on my way to Toastmasters. That little voice said, turn left here. And the arrow to turn left was red, and the green light to go straight was right ahead of me. And I was like, what are you talking about? Turn there. It's red, and I got green light, and I just ignored it. And then just before I passed through the intersection, I saw the green arrow, the red arrow turned to a green arrow. I was like, oh, I could have turned. And then I got to Portola where I had to turn left. And guess what? Construction.
Yeah.
You don't ignore that little voice, right? That's the lesson in that.
This is we're coming close to a break, but I want to kind of riff on that for a second because during my recent class, when we're talking about inspiration, one of the challenges that I think that we all face is Source or the Joyful One, whatever your label is always talking to us. The information is coming in. And I also think kind of the way you're describing it is coming in a way that you can understand it. If you would take the time to pay attention, you know, another one of the six mental faculties is will, the ability to focus. And part of the challenge is so much of our society says that if you hear voices in your head, you know, we're going to send you in the old days to the state hospital. You're crazy.
Going to Bellevue.
Yeah, we're going to Bellevue with you because when people start hearing voices. But the funny thing is those voices are very important to all of us. And culturally, we've said, okay, that's kind of crazy. Here's the boxes. This is how God should talk to you. If you're Catholic, you're going to be in prayer and then something's going to happen. But the more I'm around people who really understand not only religion, but spiritual life, they realize that no, that spiritual information is coming into you. And part of what we did in class was to focus on the idea that when you get that left turn, I think I should turn left now, is like, I'm going to try it. I'm going to, you know, and this is kind of what I told people, just try it. Just listen sometimes and just follow it and see what happens. Because more often than not, you're going to realize that, oh my God, if I had turned left, I would have avoided this whole construction thing. And now I'm late for the meeting. It's like, yeah. Oh man, if I'd only listened. And there are so many parts of our human capacity that I think people don't pay attention to. So I have to say this, we are coming up on a break. I am going to cut here to the commercial break. But when we come back, I want to talk more about this little voice and how you communicate with that and how other people can maybe connect to some of those voices. And the other thing I want to talk about, I'm an Abraham Hicks fan and a Theo fan. So I want to talk about people who manifest as well. So this is Laura Meeks Show. You're on Laura Meeks. If you want to get a hold of me, Laura Meeks at Fly High Living is where I am. And we're going to cut to a break and we'll be right back.
Raising the vibrations through stimulating conversations while exploring the mysteries of Atlantis and Lemuria on Tales from the Merworld Radio with me, Amira Beth. Join us every second and fourth Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Be ready to feel empowered and an active part of the changing earth. For more information about me, visit AmiraBeth.com.
Are you ready to transform your life and embrace magical experiences? Talking to Tanis with your host Tanis McRae is here to help you find your joy in life. Tune in live every first and third Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Let's awaken your experience and create the change necessary to take back your right to choose who you are. For more about Tanis, visit TalkingToTanis.com.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show, talk radio to thrive by. I am so thrilled to be talking to all of you. We have got talk radio for all of us. Are you ready and willing and able to accept all of the abundance you can muster up in your life? Yeah! Check us out at drpatshow.com, transformationtalkradio.com, transformationradio.fm. Oh my goodness.
How do you feel? Just okay? Well, how about you tune in and get ready to be more with The Healing Hour with me, Doc Martin, every third Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. I'm ready for your questions, and I can't wait to help you find the answers. Every month, we'll have a new live call-in show with innovative topics and a powerful hour of healing. To learn more about me, visit DrSharonMartin.com. See you there. I'm going to be here. You won't want to miss it.
Coming to you live on TransformationTalkRadio.com is the Brilliance Ultimatum, Time's Up with Claudette Rowley. Powerful conversations, practical innovations, and transformative solutions as Claudette and her guests delve into the possibilities and what she calls reality resistance. Join the cultural revolution and annihilate obstacles. Check it out at culturalbrilliance.com.
Tune in to Knowledge Book Radio with host Marge Potasek each Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Through many experiences, Marge was led to the Knowledge Book, a gift to humanity in its transition to the Golden Age, and it provided the truth and the answers. She now shares information from the Knowledge Book with you each week on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information, visit usa.theknowledgebook.net.
Raising the vibrations through stimulating conversations while exploring the mysteries of Atlantis and Lemuria on Tales from the Merworld Radio with me, Amira Beth. Join us every second and fourth Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Be ready to feel empowered and an active part of the changing earth. For more information about me, visit AmiraBeth.com.
Hey Hey, this is Laura Meeks. Welcome back. You're on the Laura Meeks Show. We come to you live every second and fourth Wednesday at noon Pacific. This is where we hang out and share some thoughts on transformation. I am a master of transformation, and I love finding interesting people that have a lot of interesting things to talk about in the line of transformation, personal growth, fly high living. We believe in dream on, fly high, and live adventurously. Dream on means keep your dreams alive, keep a vision alive. Fly high, do the best you can, and live adventurously. Take some calculated risks every once in a while and try to live life adventurously. We're here today with Brian Rowley. Brian is a self-professed genius. And if you caught us before the break, we're talking about the fact that when Brian was younger, 13-ish, he became aware of that little voice that was in his head, and throughout his life he has engaged with that little voice. And I find that hugely interesting. And I have not had as direct a connection as others have, but I have become incredibly aware of how important that information is. Now, for me, as I mentioned before the break, a lot of the time my genius comes out as an inspired thought or a phrase in a book, or one of my favorite books is Illusions by Richard Bach. And one of the things that Don Shimoda, who's the Messiah in that book, says is that information can come in at any time. And if you've ever had, his recommendation was this: if you've ever had a problem, just pick a book off your shelf and open it up to a any random page, and spirit will talk to you through what's on that page. So that's one way to connect to spiritual information, to inspired thinking. But Brian, a lot of what you were talking about was actually connecting, almost as if Neil Donald Walsh did, where he was using writing. You're hearing things, and one of the things we talked about during the break is that it gets interesting for you when that little voice gets really loud. Tell us what's that about?
Oh, well, I had one. The earliest I can remember of it getting really loud with me was I stepped into this attorney's office to do some work, and I'm telling you, my skin, the hair raised up on my arms, and I felt like a wave of cold on my skin, and that little voice was screaming like,
"Get out of here!"
Yeah, get out, back up. You don't go in there. And I'm like, yeah, but I need the money, dude. You know,
yeah.
The little voice is like, oh God, what are you doing, man? I was like, I really need the money. And the little voice is like, I'm telling you, man, back your ass up. And I was like, Jesus, I really need this money. And I just kept fighting for my needs and what I wanted. And boy, I wound up in a lawsuit. I wound up in trouble. I wound up in a situation that I was never going to be worth the amount of money that I was paid to do this job for a shyster lawyer who, anyway, I won't go on.
Yeah.
The point is,
I get the gist of that.
The voice was,
The
voice was really loud, and I ignored it. And I had another instance. I was in Palm Springs leaving a client site, and I could turn left to go someplace that would make me less happy, or I could turn right for no reason other than the little saying, turn right. Turn right here. And I'm just like yelling, just turn right. Listen to me. Go home. And I'm like, no, but I want to go over there. I want to go left. And well, I went left and things didn't go well. And I could have had a different life if I'd just turned right at that
moment. Tell me an example of when you did follow it and it turned out like, oh my God, I'm so glad I listened to my little voice in my head.
It's the speech I gave in Toastmasters about this thing that actually happened. I was in my office by myself on a Saturday, writing on the back of checks for deposit only and doing the deposit with your cell phone routine
right.
at my bank. Yeah. And I was like, how many times am I? Yeah, well, this is probably 2013 or something.
Yeah, us older folks, we just learned about it in the last year.
Anyway, I'm writing, I keep writing for deposit only, and I just got tired of writing those three words, and I thought, I wonder if there's a stamp. I could just go get a rubber stamp that'll say for deposit only. And yeah. I thought, well, yeah, I can go, I'll just go to the Office Store. So I get it, I look up on Office Max or Office Depot, they have them. And now I start doing the math. It's like, okay, so it takes me about 3 seconds to write this. How many 3 seconds do I have to do before I recover the money?
The $9.
How much? Yeah. How much time would I save, you know, at 3 seconds a piece to not, you know, just say, oh, you really don't need the stamp. But, and as soon as I started thinking about that, that little voice said, go do it, because something good could happen. You're not going to have that something good while you're here in the office by yourself. But if you get out there and you take this ride, something good could happen. And I was like, ooh, that's strong. I mean, that was not just a feeling. It was that actual explanation was, but something good will come of it. Just go. Don't worry. Don't think about the money. Don't think about the time. Get your ass out of the chair. Get in your car.
It's a nice day. Up.
You know? Yeah. And I'm sorry to swear. I don't know. But anyway, so I went and did this thing.
We can do whatever. Yeah.
So I went to Office Max in La Quinta. I drove the 10 minutes or whatever. So I keep trying not to calculate the time and the money that's involved in this.
Funny how this is going through your head, by the way.
Yeah.
It's very calculated.
So I get the little rubber stamp. And as I'm about to leave, I pass by this shelf that has closeout items. And I look in there. There's a CD set written by the guy, the Habits of Highly Effective
People. Oh, yes. Stephen Covey, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People.
That's it. And the title of the CD set is Find Your Voice, which
I hear my voice.
happens to be also one of the slogans Toastmasters used to use. And I thought, there it is. This is the thing I was supposed to find. The rubber stamp was not the thing. I was coming for that. But this is the thing that little voice was trying to get me to find, because it was really useful.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's so important that people, this is kind of why we were talking about it, because of all the other tools that we have as humans, and intuition is part of what we are gifted with. Those are things that are helpful to you. But again, so many people are inexperienced and unpracticed in paying attention to that voice. Okay. Especially now during this COVID, and this is, it was interesting. One of the things that they did a study on, inspired thought. So there were some psychologists that wanted to see whether inspiration was important or not. And interestingly, they studied people who were making a large purchase, so like a car or a house. And what they did is they asked them ahead of time, you know, you're going to walk in and get a car. What's your gut feeling about which car you want? And then which car did you buy? And interestingly, they found that especially for humans buying large things like cars or houses, that your gut feeling is by far and away the best information you have. When they went backwards and they said, okay, because I have to say, there's a part of me that wants to research. You know, that's part of my male background and part of my scientific training is that, you know, if I was going to go about a car, I would, in general, I typically would, you know, go on CarMax or, you know, do some research and figure out what the reviews were and all that. But one of the things that they found is those people that did all that research and bought a car didn't like the car they bought as much as the people who said, you know, if you've seen my car, I like that pink bug. That's the cutest little car I want. And honestly, that was my inspired car. When I came out to California, I had driven vans forever. And I said, well, you know, God darn it, I'm not driving vans anymore. I want a cute little car that just is me. And I bought that bug and painted it pink just for me. And I love that car. Ever since, I still have it. I still drive it every day. I love that car. But it was, that was an inspired thought to turn it pink because that's what I wanted. But it's interesting that people don't listen to that part of them. Now you've had a lot of practice. Is that still an important part of your daily life?
It is. And you mentioned Emerson earlier, and that's, and you actually mentioned the idea, I'm turning behind me because there's a book. This is the book that I use. You said, Return to Love.
Oh, Return to Love. Love, yeah. Marianne Williams. Yeah.
So that's where I can flip open a page quite often and I find exactly what I'm looking for or something absolutely relevant to what's going on. Sometimes it involves other people in my life. Like somebody was doing a resume. I flipped to a page that was about, your resume is about how you're helping people. It doesn't have very much to do with what you've done.
It's about, it's not like a list.
Your value to the world, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, that kind of cool. And then I saw some stuff in there about relationships. One of my very close friends is going through some relationship changes. And so it was very pertinent to what I would say to her. So I just shared that passage with her. The thing that I wrote to you in the chat is that I think authors, because of their relationship with words, have a better capacity for putting, for gathering the meaning, because you can have gut feelings, you can have instinct. But until you can put into words what that inspiration is, it's not quite as concrete. And so that's why I think, like Neil Donald Walsh, you can have the same conversation or have the same feelings or spiritual association or connection to whatever that power is for you. But until you put it in words, I often say what you write is what's true. What you write is what is your reality, just like you say your thoughts create them.
Yeah.
The things that you write down, which is like count your blessings. I used to harp on that. If you just write down three good things that happened today before I go to bed, well, then my day was good. And it's true because it's written. It's not true because it happened. It only becomes true when you write it down, because then you can look back and say, wow, that was a good day. And you have proof and evidence of it. Otherwise, it was just, you just had good feelings or whatever. But having words to use and making records of the good things that are coming from this spirit guide, that little voice, the happy one, the joyful one.
The joyful one. Yeah. I live with the joyful one.
Yeah. But do you write
fly
it down?
Fly with me in these little balloons and it's fun.
Yeah. But the things you write down that come from that inspiration, they become your evidence. And then eventually you can say, I have proof that this is true because I have the words to show you what happened. I can let you read it and judge for yourself. But it's true for me, and you can believe me or not. I like to say, don't take my word for it. Try it.
Try it. Now, are you an Abraham Hicks fan?
Every day. I have a subscription to the email thing that comes every day, and I look at it, and it's like, it's funny because some of it is so old, and it's still absolutely perfect. And I was telling Jill, you know Jill?
Yeah.
I was telling Jill, when the thing that's coolest thing about the truth is that it's always true. It doesn't change.
Weird. Why? Hence the name, truth.
Yeah. Well, it's very helpful because once you start using it, or you start using as your MO to say, hey, this is my truth. This is what I'm telling you that's true. No one can challenge it. They can say, well, that's not really true. Well, it's true for me. This is how I feel. And especially if you use the word feel, you can't deny someone their feelings. So that's what's true.
When I was in the Air Force, and this was another inspired thought, one of the things that we had in the military was we had patches on our uniforms and we had business cards. And when I was overseas, one of the fun things to do was when people went up to Korea, you could get like 100, 200 business cards for like $5. And they were really elaborate. Gold foil, they get your wings and your all these other things on it. And so I had a friend going up to Korea, and so I thought, well, I'm gonna put my business card together. And my inspired thought was this: the phrase that I had on that card, and I've used it for years and years, is "the truth is what you believe." And I did that because I was in a situation where I was in charge of, we were in a super secret, top secret SCIF, which is a secured building with soundproofing and anti-electronic stuff, so we can have our super, super secretist war plans, which is part of what I was building, is our master war plan to knock out our enemy in Russia with all our nuclear weapons that we had available to us. And so that was super, super secret stuff. Well, then they invented computers, and there was some information that said computers had the ability to emanate this electronic signal that the Russians could hear outside our walls. And so that one of the things that they did is they put together a printer. Printers were a big problem because the electronics of the printer and how it was printing was, in theory, being able to be heard outside. Or I say heard, not like in audio, but they could electronically figure out what you were printing. So what they did is they invented super secret printers and printer boxes so that, that the signals wouldn't emanate. Kind of like the cage with the electronics. So all of that being said, I was the person that had to make sure that was happening. But the problem was is that it was very, very hard to use that printer. So really most everybody in the office used the unsecret printer because it was so much easier. We had like five different word processors. We had like Multimate Word and Wordsmith and Word, all kinds of stuff. So I went into to my boss's office and I said, "Boss, we've got to do something. People are printing on the non-secure printers." And he pounded his fist on the table and said, "We are not doing that." But boss, hold on a sec. "Hey, Lou, are you printing on the non-secret printer?" "Yep, I sure am." I was like, "Boss, your reality of we're not doing this is countered by Lou saying he is. So what's..." Oh man, that I first of all, I learned don't piss your boss off. He stood up and get the hell out of my office. I don't want to hear this. But when I came out of that, I thought, wow, he's just created his own reality of no, we're not. And I thought, well, but in my reality, Lou said he was. In my reality, he was printing. So I came up with the secret: truth is where you believe. And I think it's helpful in that we all are experiencing this world through our own mind, our own perspective. You know, we have five earthly senses that are bringing information into us. But then inside your head is where all this stuff gets processed. And you have your own background, your own culture, your own experiences in life, your own connection to the little voice. All of those things are manipulating that information to give you value as to what you believe is going on. And does that make any sense?
I'm just reflecting on one of the things that I've said and do say is your five senses kind of fool you in a way, and it leads me to the grand conclusion, which I won't bore you with the details getting there. The grand conclusion is the mistake I think a lot of people make is they look outside of themselves for God.
I would agree that I think
everything that's outside of you is what comes in through your senses. That's not where God is, or my interpretation of God. If you take things literally, if you were created in God's image, then guess where God lives? You know, it's like, yeah, that's what your spirit is. You know, you can call it what you want to, but that's my foundation of knowledge, is that I'm supposed to know, I'm supposed to figure out to the best of my ability how to treat everyone as if I were God. If you were all my children, how would I treat you? I'd be as nice to you as I possibly can and wish for your best life and try to help you be successful and happy. That's what I would do if you were all my children, right? It's a really nice way to treat people. You just, you know, you go out into the world and you'd be nice to every stranger you meet, and your world gets better.
Yeah, well, and so I want to go back to Hicks. So in the land of, because one of the people, and I may have shared this with you, I may not have. I have been associated with Marcus and Sheila Gillette. Sheila Gillette manifests an entity called Theo. She's been doing it since the 60s. It was her that Who is that?
Esther. Esther.
Esther. Hicks. So yeah, Esther went to LA and met Sheila and watched her manifest. Months later, then all of a sudden, Esther's starting to feel some of these things. They went back to Sheila and said, hey, I'm starting to feel these things. And they kind of worked together until all of a sudden she was manifesting Abraham. Now, I have to tell you, this is, and you'll appreciate this from a spiritual point of view. You know, as I go to the spiritual center, there's all these groups about Abraham Hicks. And I had no idea what Abraham Hicks was, but I knew that I was going to go to Amazon and get his book because Abraham's a guy and he wrote this book and I'm going to get it. and then I find
that it is given.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden I get on Amazon and it's written by Esther and Jerry Hicks. It's like, what? And then Abraham's a manifestation. It's like, whoa. I mean, like, I'm like way, you know, from my non-Unitarian background to where I am now, I gotta say, I was in a whole new land. But I have I have actually flown in the glider with Marcus, and I've been with Sheila and Marcus at a seminar, and we've been friends for a while. And to actually see her do that manifestation and to watch Abraham Hicks really connects me to that energy. But tell me how that fits in with the little voice versus the voice from over here.
Voice from over here.
Well, Sheila and...
Oh, I got you. How are other people's...
Yeah, I mean, they're manifesting a voice that's coming, you know, that, you know, Esther manifests Abraham and then passes all this information on. That's not voice.
No, I got a really good answer to that from my boy Waldo, that's what I call Ralph. Ralph Waldo Emerson. He goes by Waldo. And so
he goes by Waldo. Where's Waldo? Yeah, oh, he's over there on the shelf.
But he actually came up with the best possible explanation of what the answer to that question is for me, because I can share with you a passage where he basically says, I'm not saying anything new. I'm not saying anything that people who knew better and came before me have already said all this stuff. It's just I'm connected to it too, and I have my words to use to try to convey this information to you. And I'm getting that same stuff from Esther and Abraham Hicks, is that she's just connected to the same channel that has the same information that Emerson had in 1860, by the way. And,
I've been to his house, by the way.
Oh, you mentioned the Unitarian Church, which is where I was reconnected to Emerson. On the third time that I went to church, they were talking about Emerson and how he did his address to the graduating class of the Harvard.
Yeah, well, and Emerson was, I think, for a little while, a Unitarian minister.
Yeah.
I just
know he, what I heard Emerson say sounded so much like what I've been saying that I thought, wait a minute, who's this guy who lived 150 years ago and is saying things that I say? And that just brought me right back to Emerson. I've been reading him since then, and just, it's amazing how.
Well, Brian, I hate to say this, Brian.
But we're out of time.
Damn, we're out of time. But we continue this conversation. I will kind of end with this. The stuff that you're talking about, the stuff that I'm talking about, I too am very, one of the things that amazes me, because I read Emerson, I like Thoreau better, but I like Emerson as well. One of the things that I was really hit with is the idea that there is nothing that you and I are saying that's different, but it's important to the world to know that, you know, sometimes people are going to listen to Laura Meeks on her show and understand it. I'm going to have a guest and they're going to hear it from you and they're going to go, wow, it was so clear when Brian said it. It's like, that's why we're all here. We're sharing. It goes back to your original, why share your information? Because sometimes the way I say it and the way you say it is going to connect to one other person and life is going to be better. Sadly, that's the end of an incredible hour. Thank you, Brian, for sharing and coming be with us. We will get you back on the show to finish some of this. There's a lot. There's so much more that we can share out there. This is, if they need to get a hold of you, do you have a quick, how do they get a hold of Brian?
My name is Brian Rowley, and the last name is spelled R-O-U-L-E-Y. You can send email to brian@rowley.com.
brian@roley.com. We'll post that on the in the postscript as well. So if you want to get a hold of Brian, you can, or you can get me, Laura, at Fly High Living. That's how we do it. That's all the time we got. Thanks so much, and we will see you in 2 weeks at noon here on the Laura Meeks Show. Go out and make it a great day.
Okay, thanks. Take care.
You've been listening to the Laura Meeks Show. Dream on, fly high, live adventurously on Transformation Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in, and we hope you'll join us next month as Laura helps you find your unique gifts so you can bring them to the world. For more information on Laura Meeks or to listen to past shows, visit her website at flyhighliving.com. Check out her hit Dream On 12-week course, where you get the personal attention you need to fly high in your new life.